And good afternoon. Welcome to a kind of late start to Burning Vinyl. We're broadcasting this edition from Musgrave Park in Brisbane, where we're at the Decolonisation Before Profit Summit put on by the Brisbane Aboriginal Sovereign Embassy here in Brisbane, a kind of counter to the G20, which is happening less than 200 metres away from where we are. It's kind of an amazingly short distance.
Hear those choppers.
Yes, and thanks to Matt for giving up his time to us today to broadcast, live from Brisbane for the next hour and 40 minutes or hour and a half. We're running a little bit late because we were part of the Aboriginal Sovereign Embassy had a march to march against the deaths in custody, and it was a quite confronting, moving amount of speeches in the city from a lot of family members who've lost people in custody. And then there was a great march through the city across the bridge. Slightly different route to the other marches this week because Brisbane is in lockdown. Well, not really. Of course, everything's been overhyped by the media. They've kind of tried to make it sound like no one can get around at all, but of course you can walk around through most of Brisbane still. It's more for the cars and traffic that have been denied access to everything, which is in some ways not a bad thing. The city without cars is kind of nice in some ways. But anyway, so for all those people that are kind of, believe the hype and didn't come up to Brisbane, they're missing out because we're having actually had a great time in Musgrave Park. There's a whole gang from 3CR here, about 10 of us, 12 maybe now. Here camped out since Friday night. We've been in Musgrave Park and we've been made extremely welcome by the Brisbane Blacks here at the Aboriginal Sovereign Tent Embassy. It's been a great time. And I should mention, Michael, I'm joined here with Emma and Ronnie. And hopefully during the next hour and a half, going to have heaps of guests. As I said, though, everyone's just come back from the rally, so everyone's a little bit tired because it's 30-something degrees up here in Brisbane.
It sure is hot. Yeah, Michael, you were late because you were driving a ute in the rally. We ran over and got here slightly before you. You ran over and set up your own microphone and dove in perfect time. It's quite impressive.
As everyone at these kind of things do, you kind of help out and you get asked to help out a lot. So I got to drive the medics van, then the water carrier van at the back of the parade again, which is kind of fun because you have a bizarrely surreal view of the streets. You get to go through red lights and down one-way streets the wrong way and do everything with a kind of margin of cops on either side, and we had about six cop cars and two cop buses following me, just slightly freaky. But that's a surreal experience and something different to experience here in Brisbane. But as I said, we're hoping to play a few interviews and things and hopefully have a few guests at times, but there's actually a big forum taking place again, to look at some of the ways to help stop the deaths in custody, which is an ongoing problem, of course, for Aboriginal communities around Australia. There's been a few, I think, in the news just this week. So, we'll hopefully have some guests, but otherwise we'll be here to entertain you until 4 o'clock. Oh, I should say big thanks to the gang for Music Matters too for covering a little bit of time until I got my shit together and got here.
And also, I'm just going to make a mention about this morning rally.
Yep.
One of the significance or the highlight of this rally is to see the emotions that run high and the front line of all those emotions, and to see the strength is from the mothers and grannies that they came out and tell the experience of losing their sons and even loved ones. And that's just puts everyone who were there at the moment, like, it is a very historic moment of its own, where, and the emotions as it runs high. And one of the auntie Karen, who made a statement that came out and said that, I don't have a son.
Yeah.
And, for someone, for listeners who were not at the venue, at the site, to be there, it's very historic in itself, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of the people were inspired, and to see that there is still the spirit of resilience amongst the mothers, the fathers, and even the young ones who are coming out, and you could see that that the spirit of resilience is there, and it is the cause that is moving forward, where a lot of the First Nation people will come together and joined and connected in different areas. And this is one great thing about being here throughout the week, is to hear the positive stories from different First Nation people, and for them to come and tell their stories and to strengthen each other and to keep the spirit of the land and the struggle keep alive and, you know, keeping the fire burning. And that has been the word that is going around this week, the vibe,
Yeah, and speaking of the sacred fire, actually, we have an announcement for people here in Musgrave Park. There's something happening over at the sacred fire now. If you want to head over there for the post-rally gathering around the sacred fire, you can head over there now.
We should mention we're also, besides broadcasting back to Melbourne, kind of doing DJ and announcement duties here in the park.
Multi-skills.
Yes.
Reality.
We're helping out in various ways. But it has been inspiring being in the park, as I said, since Saturday when we arrived, well, when the first load of us arrived, for the amount of organisation and events that have been put on by the Sovereign Embassy here. They've had three marches this week, a full week of forums and gatherings and discussions taking place in the afternoons, concerts in the evening. There's a big monster truck parked with a stage that kind of folds out. There's an amazing cooking tent with some amazing staff who've been most overworked people I've ever seen, cooking for a couple hundred people, and even more harder cleaning up after a couple hundred people. There's chai tents, there's toilets, you know, it's basically a small festival in the park, and the amount of organisation is amazing by a small group here at the Sovereign Embassy, and especially when they've had run-ins with the council and the police kind of continuously, and so they've done a great job, and it's been great to be here for the last week, and of course we'll be here for two more days till Sunday.
And also, not forgetting that the Tricia volunteers here, the media team here, apart from doing the live coverage, we also help in the sound system at the monster truck and also in the kitchen and also other logistics. And it's been great, like, you know.
It's been fun being involved.
Everyone has been spontaneously ready
to support.
It's been a privilege
being involved. It's nice to be a very undetached media in this sense.
We've been made very welcome here since we arrived. I think the first person we met in the park late Friday night kind of just said, oh, we've been waiting for you. So they've been expecting us to arrive, and we've been made welcome, or very welcome, since we arrived here. So it's for anyone, as I said, who thought of coming to Brisbane, was scared about the kind of hyped up violence threats by the police and the government. It's kind of a shame, because they would have had a great time here in the park. As I said, we're so close, we can actually see the building just beyond the trees, just only basically a block and a half away from where we are.
Reckon we're having more fun than they are, though.
Yes.
I'll bet.
I think that's definitely true. So should we go to a song, and we'll come back and talk about some of the other stuff that's been happening up here this week? And a couple of tracks there. We heard first up Colour of Your Skin from Black Image, and followed that up with Yothu Yindi and Mainstream. And you're listening to Burning Vinyl on 3CR 855am, streaming through 3cr.org.au or on 3CR on digital. And we're broadcasting from Musgrave Park in Brisbane at the Aboriginal Sovereign Tent Embassy. Yeah, a couple of hundred metres or a short, or was it, Robbie said yesterday, a short Shanghai shot from the convention centre if they went on the prohibited list, along with many other things that are also prohibited. Tishan, you were just saying that the police are even, because there's been a few expulsion notices, or what
That's
are they
right,
called?
Exclusion
notices.
So it's up to three, I think, people have now been excluded. And what's interesting, I saw the latest exclusion on the Queensland Police Service's Twitter account. So they tweeted their media release. But what I found quite concerning was the fact that they are publishing the photos and full names of the people who have been added to the exclusion list on the Queensland Police Service website. So for the listeners who don't know, we're here in Brisbane, Musgrave Park, as Mike announced, and currently the G20 meeting they're all gearing up for the meeting, which is going to be happening this weekend. And there's a number of kind of zones that the government's created here in Brisbane. So the convention centre, where the actual G20 meeting is happening, is called an exclusion zone.
I can't remember the word. But yeah, basically there's a declared zone. There we go.
Declared
and then
zone.
There's also a restricted zone.
Which is where we are, I think.
Yeah, I I think Musgrave Park should be within the restricted zone technically, but because of the significance of the park and the negotiations of the embassy over the past laborious few months, it sounds, we're here sitting in a tent and I'm eating a sausage, which is quite different to, I believe, the council plans.
So, but technically what that, my understanding is, that exclusion order means that this these people have been put on it. It means that they can't come within any of the declared...
Or restricted zones even, I think.
Restricted zones. So that means that a lot of South Brisbane is a part of that, so Musgrave Park being within South Brisbane. But a lot of South Brisbane is covered, including people's homes. Many homes are full within this zone of which people can be arbitrarily excluded from. And it's on the say-so of the Queensland Police Chief Commissioner, and
I don't think you even necessarily have to be charged with crime, do
no,
you?
No crime needs to be committed.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the major legal changes I think we're seeing since these laws came into effect. Was it last night? Late last night?
7 p.m. I think was lockdown supposedly.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost as though the what is it, the onus of proof, the burden of proof has also been reversed. I mean, on the way over to the rally earlier this morning, some people we were with got stopped and searched by the police because they had backpacks, and had to provide their names. You know, the police person said, oh, just so you know, we can keep track of who we've spoken to. But if you don't provide your name in the restricted area, you can be arrested. And there's no reasonable suspicion required or anything like that. They can just ask. So, it's a bit of a topsy-turvy world here at the moment. Yeah.
And I think some of the people we've met in the park have also, when they got off the train arriving in Brisbane, have had their backpack searched, had their camera and phone searched as well. Mm. The police are allowed to go through your phone and look at basically whatever they want to look at.
That you, all my embarrassing text messages.
And, of course, there's a, kind of a insanely hilarious, if it wasn't so true, list of prescribed items that you can't carry. Including eggs,
lizards
or
on
other
the
animals
list.
Or something. Yeah, there's a bizarre list of things that for some reason they think people may want to carry into the zone.
And I heard some theories flying about.
I think conspiracy theories going around.
Firmly tongue-in-cheek, that the reason that lizards are not allowed in the area could be something to do with the theory that the G20 leaders are actually reptilians taking on human form, and maybe that's why they don't want lizards in the area. Who knows?
It's almost certainly the case. This is the proof we've been waiting for after all this time.
So look, here you're listening to Burning Vinyl, and we're in a short time we're going to have Auntie Rhonda, who you might have heard featured in the 3CR broadcasts in the past over the past week, and she's going to come on and perform a song for us when she's finished having lunch.
Yeah, and yep, you know, so I didn't mean to interrupt. But yeah, one of them, hopefully a few people will gather around us here at our little tent, which is kind of on a nice little slope on the edge of the park, overlooking the wonderful scene of everyone gathering for lunch and down at the forum on the other side of the park.
Mm. And just to dob in some of the people who are sitting in the tent here with me, there's a rumour that the 3CR All-Stars band might be busting out some tunes as well. So, lucky listeners, stay tuned for that. In the meantime, perhaps it might be good to go to our next song.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I was thinking who's going to announce it, and it's me that's got the thing in front of me. This is from Rabbit and Mop, who I think I've been told an old Brisbane Murray band, maybe. And the track, Mr. Moonlight.
Mr.
And we're back with Burning Vinyl here from Musgrave Park in Brisbane, as we mentioned, at the Aboriginal Sovereign Tent Embassy, situated in Musgrave Park, a short distance from the capitalist convergence happening at the G20 and the globalisation against decolonisation against profit, summit is happening here in the park, continuing on. It's been happening all week. And if you've been listening to 3CR during the week, you would have heard highlights from a lot of the great stuff that's been happening. Of course, Monday,
There was a great, Sunday actually, it all started kind of really. There was a great welcome to country ceremony featuring a lot of dancers and performances and a welcome to everyone here to the park. Monday, we had the Stop Stealing Our Children rally that started in the city. Most of the marches this week have been starting at the Roma, what's called the Roma Street Forum, which is a small parkland opposite the, just happens to be opposite the police station and the Magistrates Court in downtown Brisbane, just near the main train station. So that was Monday. Tuesday, they had Our Land, Our Water, Our Future march. No waste dumps, no uranium mining, no fracking. There was a rally again and a march through the city, and both of these events were followed by forums here at the park. There was hours of discussions taking place about what the various communities can do to kind of counter these problems. Wednesday was, there was a Young People's Forum where the Warriors of the Aboriginal Resistance met and discussed what the next generation can do to kind of solve some of the problems that have, the Aboriginal communities around Australia face, often, particularly here in Brisbane, but yeah, there were groups from all around Australia. Yesterday was Beyond Native Title Aboriginal Nations Assembly Sovereignty and Treaties Forum. And then today, as we mentioned earlier, there was a Deaths in Custody rally and a gathering and forum taking place this afternoon. There's also going to be a corroboree this afternoon at some point. Though at the moment, I think we're going to hear some live music from a couple of members of the travelling team that have been coming around with us. I'll let them take it away. And we've just been listening to Raya and Ronnie, two of the members from 3CR, who've kindly... do you want to introduce the song, Ronnie?
Yes, this song is sung in PNG language, Stok Pisin, and it's about coming together. And it's great that today we are here out at the Musgrave Park. There is a great energy here, and the spirit of resilience is amazing. And so, you know, it's a song to just echoing that the spirit of resilience and the energy that it has been throughout, you know, even throughout this week that we've been witnessing. And, you know, we're also empowered by the stories that that has been told through the forums and through the discussions that and the interviews that has been going on for the last few days. So it's a song for them. We'll be coming with more songs, so just stay tuned. Yeah, coming up next will be some more songs.
Yum Yum by Charlie Rich. We've been playing a lot of Aboriginal music from up in Queensland this week. We've been given a lot of music by people here in the Aboriginal Sovereign Tent Embassy to play. Because we mentioned earlier, we've besides broadcasting back to Melbourne, we've also been DJing in the park and keeping everyone entertained from an early hour. The music starts at 7 to get everyone up early and up and going. Though it's not hard to get up early when the blazing sun is burning us all by about 6 o'clock in the morning. It's
music is really great that, you know, it brings peace to your soul.
Mm. And it makes a nice atmosphere in the park. It's been great. Yeah, but Ronnie, are you going to play another track for us?
Yeah, why not? And this song that I'm going to be playing, it's going to be a special dedication to Auntie Karen, who's sitting right next to me here. And the last few days, I haven't played it on the stage. And so Auntie has been asking me, Ronnie, when are you going to sing this song? So this is the right time now. So I'm going to sing this song to Auntie Karen. Special dedication to you, Auntie Karen. Wan palameri, you write in pasilolong me, you talk in me, by me maritim you, now you go. Something wrong, long leva bolong me. You know enough, you come back. No more poro money, no more merry, belong lo me. Something wrong, long leva bolong me. You know enough. So we're going to do another song, another request. And so this other song we're going to be singing, it's also a song in the spirit as well of resilience and also thinking of the brothers and sisters in West Papua as well for their fight for freedom. da san ikama nawari stape long ways papua san igoda san ikama nawari stape long ways papua only like it freedom. All one talk belong to me. Only like in freedom, freedom, long west Papua. All one talk belong to me.
Take it away, Raya. Like it freedom, freedom, West Papua, all one talk belong to me. Giving freedom, freedom, West Papua, all one talk belong to me. Long, oh, I believe belong all oh, long independence. One pelata, ting ting belong all. Oh, I believe belong all oh, long independence. One pelata. Thank you.
And a big thanks to our guests there performing, Ronnie, Ryan, Emmy, Emma from 3CR, and a couple of also added guests, some of the elders from the Sovereign Embassy with some backing on the clapsticks. And we might just go to a quick song and... we'll be back in a moment with our guest.
That's right. We've got some more guests coming up, so it's great. So we'll be back soon.
But I'm joined here now. Yes, there we are. We're joined here now in the 3CR tent by Ricky Pascoe. Do you want to introduce yourself and tell everyone where you're from and what you've been up to?
Yeah, my name's Ricky Pascoe. I'm a Ngarrabul Ngunnawal Wiradjuri man, and I grew up in this park here, Musgrave Park, Brisbane, since I was about 9 years old. And this park here is our meeting place. If this is Yuggera country, this is Turrbal country and Yuggera country, and our surrounding tribes of the Mulanjali people, the Noonuccal and the Waka Waka, very strong people in this park and have been for many years. And when I grew up in Brisbane, it was all about sharing and caring, and we all looked after each other in this park as brothers and sisters. And a lot of us got harassed by the police every day of our life. Most of us, there was 200 kids at one stage. We were living underneath the bridges here at South Brisbane, and we lived in this park together. And the coppers called us rock apes. And so we, as kids, said, yeah, we'll be rock apes. And for the next 20 years on, we all ended up in and out of prison all our life, and we lost a lot of our brothers in custody through hangings or either heart attacks or accidents, but most of them have been unexplained and unfinished business. For instance, we had a brother that called Garni Miklo. He was our strongest brother here in this community, and they kept him in jail for 2 life sentences. The first time was for assault, but the second time was not being at the right place at the wrong time whilst on leave of absence from the corrective services. It was pretty harsh. punishment to keep a man for another life sentence in prison. I was the first prisoner in the state of Queensland to be, come out of prison as a paralegal to work for the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Legal Services, QEA. And I grew up in this community with the elders and the leaders and the marches in the 70s. And those people set those organisations up for us so that we would be defended in court. It's a sad fact that back in 2006, the Aboriginal Legal Services of Brisbane, called Queensland South, deregistered QEA without the permission of the members of QEA. And they went on to sack all the QEA staff, Aboriginal people throughout the state of Queensland. And the federal government assisted Shane Duffy and his little crew in doing this illegal act. And they operate illegally in this town as Queensland South Aboriginal Legal Service. They actually operate illegally because they had no right to continue under the new constitution called Queensland South. They gutted the organisation of its assets and liabilities, and then they called the AGM special meeting after the fact that they did so, and then they thought they'd get everybody's vote, but they didn't. And after the meeting finished, they said, no, we're going to go ahead anyway, whether you like it or not. And the federal government still supports this organisation. Since 2007, I've rang up the federal government, I rang up attorney generals, I rang up officers of Prime Minister and Cabinet about this matter, and they seem to be supporting the current position, but I'm yet to follow it up, and I won't give up until the day I die, because there's people in their graves that set up that organisation. There are people in Queensland courts, Aboriginal people attending Queensland courts daily, getting told if they don't plead guilty, they're in conflict with the organisation, so we can't represent you. And it's come to a stage where the legal system has bought on this conflict. All lawyers, a lot of lawyers, if they argue with a client in an interview these days, they call it conflict, and they refuse to represent a client in a court of law. 90% of people in Australia are lay to law, which is like they have numeracy literacy problems to law, basically, and they don't know the common processes, etc., or which way to go. So they rely on lawyers to give them legal advice, and these lawyers basically operate. The system now operates on a statistical basis and funding basis. So the statistics prove that they're dealing with people. That's all they need to justify to the government. The statistics also prove that are continually putting more of our people in custody without representation and proper representation. Recently, the police tasered and shot one of our young lads twice in Brisbane, and that matter's before the courts now. So that should come up after Christmas. We're watching that case very closely, and I think 3CR should watch it also. I'll give you details after this after the interview. But the police, you know, I used to do the cultural awareness training for the Queensland Police and the Federal Police here in Queensland, and with Artie Flo Watson. But I used to do the cultural awareness training whilst working at legal at the academy, and it is sad to say that all that training is tokenism. The Queensland Police Academy have failed to provide a police liaison officer at the academy for the last 2 years, failed to fill a position. And that's one of the most important roles of our community, to educate the police about cultural relationships and communication strategies to deal with Aboriginal people. They say prisoners a lot. You know, the Muirhead report of deaths in custody and the 339 recommendations that were recommended by the Muirhead inquiry for the deaths in custody report. We have yet to implement and start those recommendations. They are still only recommendations till today, and we are still seeing people dying in custody at the hands of police. Our prisons have turned into our society has turned into a prison under the new laws of Queensland government regime, where these new laws contradict each other through other governmental departments, so they don't come in line with each other. Back when Anna Bligh came into Parliament when she first released her policy statement, she stated that the Queensland government would work holistically to address issues and work across partnerships with each other to try and address some of these community issues and work with communities. Well, that's still not yet done. And they use segregation and segregated issues, and they segregate issues and use a blanket approach. It has been here since invasion. Like, for instance, in prison, if a fella mucks up in the yard, they'll lock the whole yard down, you know? They'll punish everybody for it. It's a blanket approach. And that mythology comes from prison. And if you look outside the prison door, you'll see society running the same basis. So after 20 years of my life in prisons, taken away from my mother, she escaped domestic violence when I was a child from my father to get away, and she brought us to this town here, and we got a knock on the door, and we were put in a home and made the ward of the state till we were 18 years of age. So I was a ward of the state of Queensland government till I was 18 years of age. And they bought me a pair of shoes, a pair of pants and a shirt and a jumper in all the time they cared for me. And when I basically got caught up in the... after 20 years, I went into Boggar Road Prison, and we had a riot in 1986. It was of human rights against the system... We had a tin in the cell. We had no running water. We had inhumane conditions, and they made men shave every day, or else you'd be locked up. So the three men, Teddy Watson, Owen McAvoy, and Mick Cooper, God bless them, they stood up for. They refused to shave their beards for Aboriginal cultural reasons and religious reasons, and they got locked in the cell, three of them. So on the 5th of December 1986, that night at 6 o'clock. There were three wings in two jail, D wing, E wing, and F wing, and the boys were ready. There was no prison officers in the ever to be seen for the first day in our life. They're all out in the middle. They're all out there getting armoured up in black shields and all that all day. They were actually preparing for the riot. They didn't actually come in to try and prevent any riot. They prepared for that riot, and 86 men got bashed, gassed, tortured. And then it narrowed down to 11 men that got kept there for 22 days in the cells and tortured every day. And we were told to get in our showers with our clothes on. We had guns to our heads. We were bashed every meal time. We had our food spat on. These prison officers are walking around in society today. I hope they're happy with themselves. But, you know, 11 men stood up after the 86 riots and kept it going for justice in this country. And then they brought the Kennedy Inquiry in after it. And the Kennedy Inquiry allowed prisoners for the first time in the state of Queensland to have input into a submission for change in the Queensland prison system. It was actually the prison system. And when they brought the Kennedy Inquiry in, they changed the Prisons Act to the Corrective Services Act. There's only a change of wording. That's all it was. It's still the old Prisons Act. We still live under the Prisons Act today. It's only a change of wording, and it's called the Corrective Services Act. See, I went on to study English language literature in prison and studied words. And it's the words that this government relies on and lives on, and paper trails and money over words. They can make $1 million out of a word, you know?
Yep.
And they can say this year is a year of the children, and everybody's brainwashed and goes on about year of the children. So we're following the government, wait for them to give us the okay what year it is and what it's all about. But, you know, Aboriginal people have been fighting for their freedom in this country and their sovereign rights, and, you know, for a long time. We want to be freed from your society, and we're going to go back to our country and heal, and our countries are getting eaten up by mining. But, you know, I cover a lot of history of this town. As a young boy, I grew up with the elders. A lot of them old people have passed away. And a lot of them old people would be rolling in their graves today if they've seen the way these organisations are treating our people as statistics. You know, the way, you know, they'll take the money, but they won't get off their ass 24/7. They're 9-to-5 blacks, I'll tell you now. You can hate me, kill me, shoot me, whatever you want to do, but you've got to stop being 9-to-5 blacks. You've got to start coming back to the community, back to the gatherings, and support these protests, because these protests are the ones that got you people jobs. You wouldn't have jobs in these days if it wasn't for them old people in the old days. Respect to my auntie, Ellen Draper, who's passed away. She was a great fighter, and she was my mentor. But, you know, we had people like Uncle Harold Hopkins here in the park. Their Hopkins family go back in history in this park, and they, you know, they reared me as a kid, these mob, and, you know, and we were rock apes, and I wrote a poem. It's called The Rock Apes. It goes, "The cops called us the rock apes, black kids forced to live on the streets, learn life the hard way. This life to us was for keeps. Brothers and sisters, we were. Our problem we shared and solved as one. One will stick together, have fun. Sniffing glue, drinking grog, running from the cops and running from their dogs. Stealing from the rich because we were the poor, and for most of us found ourselves behind a prison door." And that was our life. And, you know, I don't have my brothers around me now, half my brothers. They died. And a lot of them, you know, a lot of them died fighting for justice.
It does seem to have been a common complaint or something we've heard a lot during the week about the fact that a lot of those organisations that a lot of people fought hard to set up in the 70s and around that time now really don't support the community. They become kind of, yeah, a bureaucracy of their own, supported by the government and looking just for government funding, but, yeah, not actually working with the community to kind of back no. down to the basic level.
No, no. We used to have 24-7, like, back in the day when you worked in a youth service, part of the role was that if you got a job in this community, you would have to volunteer night time and go out on the streets and look after your people. That was the process here.
Yeah.
You know, so we didn't get paid after hours. Even legal service used to do that. Now they're doing phone advices.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you get arrested by a police officer and you're getting a phone call from someone saying they're from legal service, it could be anybody.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I was a kid in the watch house, mate. They gave me a black eye to make me look black, you know, and bashed me in the eye and told me they were from legal service, but it was a copper. So our people, you know, coppers could be ringing them up at the watch house saying, "Oh, I'm from Aboriginal Legal Service. This is a phone advice. Just tell them your name, address, number, you know, and whatever or whatever."
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on, but our people need people beside them in the
real
police station.
Lawyer, yep.
The time they get arrested, they need a police officer contacted. Aboriginal Legal Service need to be contacted straight away. If Aboriginal Legal Service don't want to do the job, give it up and give the money away and give it back to the community that people do want to do the job.
You know? No, because it's been, yeah, an argument. There's not a lot of those community, those organisations actually down here in the park.
No, well, they're paying themselves hundreds of thousands of dollars now. They've got mansions in Kenmore and, you know, they're right. They're driving flash cars. They're cruising around the country. You know, when was Aboriginal Legal Service ever funded to fly people all over the country, you know, around the world?
Yeah.
What for?
Yeah.
And they don't even come back to the community on the ground and tell people what they've been doing and flying around the country doing it.
Yeah.
You know, there needs to be a positive communication strategy coming from communities. The processes need to be put in place. If we don't have processes in place that people don't adhere to, it's like if you go to someone's traditional country, you've got to show respect. How do you show that respect? And how do you learn what respect is and how to do it? We need education. People need to start communicating a lot more and educating each other about processes that work for us.
Yeah.
You know, corporate companies in this country. I work for one of the biggest companies in the world. I ran an Aboriginal employment strategy in Northern Territory, ACT, New South Wales and Queensland, four states I looked after. And what I had to do was have a process in place to find people jobs and to find the right people that wanted jobs. So if we as Aboriginal people have processes in place and educate our communities what those processes are as leaders, then our people won't be fighting each other and saying, "Well, what's he saying? I don't understand. How come he's talking for us, etc.? I don't understand."
Yeah.
There's those sensitive issues that affect Aboriginal tribes across this country where individuals are speaking out on behalf of everybody else without the permission of those tribes.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we do get a treaty, what is the process from there? Does anybody ever explain that?
Yep.
We're all fighting for a treaty. We're all fighting for sovereignty. But what are the processes once we get it? Are we going to fight amongst each other? Are we going to end up with nothing?
Yeah.
You know, are we going to end up with gutted organisations like we have in the past? You know?
Because, yeah, I mean, they use the money for treaties and titles to kind of divide communities.
Well, that's it. It's money and power.
Yeah.
Our Auntie Janie Arnold, she was one of the most powerful Aboriginal leaders in this community here, Brisbane.
Mm-hmm.
When we went to the opening of Parliament, Cheryl Kerno walked out down in Canberra and she reckoned, "How you going, Auntie Janie? Auntie Janie, reckon we want a cup of tea." They invited all the protesters in, give us VIP passes and a cup of tea.
Yep.
You know, and magic stuff.
Yeah.
Our elders done magic stuff that I've seen as a child and grew up in this community with, you know. And there are elders here today that won't come here today because there's too much... no faith, you know, no communication, no working together. You know, there's a lot of talk, but there's a lot of consultation, negotiation needs to go on before we move forward.
Yeah.
And we need a system that's that where everybody and every Aboriginal individual has a say. Not one Aboriginal person's left out in this country. And we need to encourage each other and support each other and say to each other, see that brother up there? Or see that sister up there? She's speaking some truth, you know? It's all about truth. But, you know, it's like we've been fighting for a long time for justice. Musgrave Park is well known all over this country as a meeting place and a gathering place, you know?
Because, yeah, we've heard some amazing stories of, you know, some of the protests and actions and just some of the stuff they've been doing here since the 70s right through the 82, 88.
Yeah.
Some of the big gatherings where they had thousands of people gathered here in the park.
Yeah, well, we've had many rallies for the Daniel Yock. He's our little brother that the cops killed here in West End, and that's still unfinished business. The saddest thing about it is that when a family loses somebody in custody, the media jump on them, and they promote them, and they get around them, and they make it a big thing, and then all of a sudden it all dies off, and that family's left to defend them for themselves. And I've come across many families that are defending for themselves and they can't even get a lawyer to help them out. And, you know, the system's so unjust and it needs to be a lot more needs to be a lot more easier for people to adapt to and understand, because 90% of this country is laid to law and destined custodies will always be there until, you know, we've got to get one win. We've got to prove, you know, why does this government defend murder at the hands of, you know, of their system?
Yeah.
Why do they spend millions of dollars defending themselves? You know, I can go on, but I wrote a poem. It's freedom in this country is confusion with all kinds of decisions made carelessly. There's nowhere to hide. A country where the rich live and the poor slowly die. Pressure is upon us all. Yet we make a stand only to be met by a wall. There's nowhere to hide. Yet I wonder, is the word freedom? I'm confused. Correct it if I'm wrong. Sudden death of this beautiful country brings tears to my eyes and the word poverty is beginning to come alive and there's nowhere to hide.
That's great. And, well, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Yeah, brother, thank you for asking me.
Thanks for your inspiring speech this morning as well. I mean, there was a lot of raw emotion in the open this morning.
Well, I was bashed with batons for 23 days, mace, gas, tortured. I've got my eyes are cross-eyed. I have damaged muscles in my eyes. And the saddest thing about it, I've had people walk up to me and go, how come you've got wongy eyes, you know? And they've had a go at me. I don't care, but they don't understand how I got it. And I wear the scar. I carry the scars of over 100 prisoners that were bashed and gassed and maced. You know, we burnt the jail that bad. It was like the gates were melted together that they had to use an oxy to get in. And after they got the oxy to get in, they dragged us like rag dolls down the stairs, mate, and flogged us like pieces of nothing, pieces of meat. But I hope one day somebody... We get justice. I hope we win one case at least, so we can use something as a precedent. I hope the people of this world join us in our fight for freedom in this country and for justice for all those families that have lost the loved ones in prison and in the hands of police and custody. Thank you.
Thanks. Yahweh. And we should get you before you go. Of course, we're going to play a track of yours.
Yeah, this is one I've been... People talk about sovereignty. I haven't collected Centrelink for a year and I've been surviving off donations and that, and I don't have a bank account or anything, and no brother got it there. And we've just been sitting around, and I've been talking to a friend of mine called Richie Lane. Next year we're organising a gig over here with the Marley brothers, the three brothers, Stephen and that, and I'm trying to get them over here to join me in Musgrave Park, and brother of mine's putting a thing together. But what I do is I... instead of being angry and violent, I turn my anger and violence into music or poetry. And this is a song I improvise. It just came to me, these words, and a brother just picked up a guitar at my home and we put it on a phone, so I hope you like it. It's about the stolen generation and about us all coming back together.
Thanks heaps for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
You're tuned to 3CR here live from Musgrave Park in Brisbane. Yeah,
oh, my people, where have you been? Oh, my people, where have you seen? Freedom in our love, freedom in our heart. On my mind, taking time to remember the day we would gather by the campfire and wait and be together as one people. Time will come back to us all. Oh, my people, I need you. Can you see the justice is unfinished in our country? Do you know that there are people behind bars and children starving in our world, taken away from their land, taken away from their people?
You're back with Burning Vinyl, and this is 3CR live from Musgrave Park in Brisbane as part of the Aboriginal Sovereign Tent Embassy gathering Decolonisation Before Profit. And I'm joined at the microphone now by Albert Hartnett. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity.
No, it's our pleasure to have you. Do you want to tell people a bit about yourself, where you're from, which part
I'm a Wankamara man from southwest Queensland. My country borders the three states, New South Wales, South Australia and Queensland. So a pretty special country out there where we cross three states.
And you're part of the Sovereign Grannies Group, or you've been a supporter of?
We've been a supporter of the Sovereign Grannies Group, but I was part of the Grandmothers Against Removals National Day of Action in Sydney on the May 26th of this year. And became involved with those ladies because of being affected by a child being removed myself, and trying to find justice and stop those injustices of having our children removed. And the movement with the grandmothers is pretty much a good way that we can stop and address the issues of welfare within Aboriginal communities.
Because the figures are kind of startling.
when it's been pointed out to us and repeatedly this week that there's kind of more children being removed now than there were during the so-called stolen generations. The figures are kind of daunting, the amount of children that are being removed by DOCS and other groups.
Yeah, it definitely is. I think in 2013 there's the statistics came out that there were 14,000 Aboriginal children in out-of-home care. Double that number with the parents and you're looking at 28,000 families that are affected. You count grandmothers and grandfathers and you're looking at over 56,000 family members that have been directly affected by a forced removal or a child being stolen by the departments.
Because the powers the department have to remove children are kind of very... they have great powers. They don't really have... there's not a lot has to be proven. It's an opinion almost based on, the workers involved to make a decision about taking the children away from their families.
There's a lot of issues that that surrounds a removal. I think under the Act, there are certain legislations in place and there are certain policies and procedures that DOCS have to follow to ensure that a lot of cultural awareness is portrayed when going in to deal with Aboriginal families to remove a child. Pretty much the same as deaths in custody and the police having an obligation to look after those prisoners whilst in their care.
And
unfortunately for us, none of them ever adhered to. I think it shows that the problem that exists within mainstream society, that gives credence to the ignorance of white Australia in terms of the genocidal practices that they've practiced on Aboriginal people for 226 years. And it's pretty much an epidemic within our communities that they've placed a lot of mistrust of us between us and the departments that that legislate towards Aboriginal children being removed.
Because the Sovereign Grannies Group put on an amazing rally on Monday.
On Monday, at our rally on Monday, and after that we had a little yarning circle at the end of the day to discuss future directions on where we should go in terms of the Grannies Group, and more or less looking to set up an alliance between Aboriginal communities across the state, across the nation, rather, to establish their own grandmothers' group so that we can start to negotiate and consult with the various departments on how we can better legislate and develop policies and practices that safeguards Aboriginal children, looks at Aboriginal children and placing them within their family kinship circles, and making sure that that they stay within the guidelines of removing an Aboriginal child. One of the aims of the Grandmothers Against Removals group is to negotiate with the Department of Community Services and basically try to wrest control and place community welfare practices back into the control of Aboriginal communities. They're looking to do that by establishing these grannies groups in their local communities, then they become the expert Aboriginal committees on negotiating and consulting with the Department of Community Services when a child is placed at risk or they get a report of a child being at risk of serious harm. Then they have an expert Aboriginal committee that they can negotiate and consult with to stop the child being removed and placed up for adoption or fostering out till they're 18 years of age, severing a vital relationship between children and family. And we look at the troubles over the years that we've had with Aboriginal children, Aboriginal youth. We can see that it's a lot more serious in the communities now. And I think this has sort of changed my mind coming up to Musgrave Park and seeing the empowerment that the youth have gained over the series of the week. And it certainly gives me some pride in knowing that we're starting to look at ways to develop and nurture our youth so that they can come up with better strategies and hopefully strategize our fight so that when we do come in and come from meetings like this and gatherings like this, we do come out with feasible outcomes and we have a clear direction of where we should be going and how we can form that solidarity between our communities and unite communities so that we can become the masters of our destinies and we can start to take charge of controlling what is happening in our communities on the ground and hopefully stop the educated blackfellas that are out there talking on our behalfs to sit down and listen and make sure that they don't speak on behalf of the Aboriginal communities. They actually come down to the Aboriginal communities and sit down and negotiate and consult with them so that they can get the information they need to make sure that that we progress forward and seek better outcomes.
Because that has been one of the inspiring things about being here during the week, because, of course, it hasn't just been rallies and protest marches. The afternoons have been spent actually looking at solutions to these problems, with big discussion sessions.
Yes, and I think that's the pride that I've started to feel during this is to we're going out of a morning, we're doing the marches, we walk in the hard yards, and after the hard yards, we actually come back and we form a yarning circle where we can discuss the various issues we've been talking about. We had Monday was the Stolen Generations and the Grandmothers movement. Tuesday we've had
the uranium mining
native title. And then just Wednesday we had the
Youth Forum.
The Youth Forum.
Yep.
And Thursday we had the
Beyond Native Title.
And today we had the Deaths in Custody. So after all of those, they're mainly all the issues that we're dealing with in our communities, and it's a way of getting together after the rallies and actually sitting down and discussing the issues at hand and hopefully trying to form a direction for each of those issues on where we should be going next to address them and consult with the appropriate people so that we can make changes that ultimately give us them feasible outcomes in our community so we can start to make inroads into the disadvantages that we suffer at a grassroots level and enable those grassroots people then to take charge and control of what's happening.
So do you have a... we're also going to speak... we're joined also at the moment by Auntie Gail.
Yeah, Gail Jackson.
Yep.
I'm a Gurang person, originally from Bundaberg, and just moved down here to Brisbane. I was just like, my mum passed away when I was 3 years old, so I got handed from family to family. And then after that, I just thought, it must have been a burden to people. But it wasn't the case. It's just that people had to move on. And I feel the same way now with my grandchildren. I've got 29.
Yep.
Two are deceased. Seven of them are not in care. The rest are in care. And it's been an uphill battle for 11 years with them. I was actually looking after 11 of the kids. They moved me into a big house over at Kangaroo Point. I was a bit hesitant because the road is very busy and I was worried about the kids
playing. Yeah, fair enough,
Anyway, 2 days after, 2 days later, the kids kicked a ball out on the road and all I could hear was the skidding of the tyres. And I had 11 of them. Then all of a sudden I was stripped of my kinship carer certificate. The kids were then they've given out to white people. But I've got four of the bigger ones who've run away and come home with me. I was living here in Brisbane, but I've just currently moved to the Gold Coast with the children. And I've got a little 15-year-old who's pregnant at the moment. And she's really scared that child safety is going to take the baby. I said, well, we'll put up a fight because we're away from all the elements that we were, you know, that was around us at the time. And they just keep taking the kids. Like my daughter had a baby about 3-4 months ago. And a couple of weeks after she had the baby, she developed an abscess. When she had the baby, she wasn't given a medical check. All they were worried about was taking the baby from her. And I almost lost her because of where the epidural went into her back, she developed that abscess. So she was in hospital for a month. And the bug that she's got, they still can't find it. So she's not going to be, you know, out of the woods for two years. So, but it's really heartbreaking, you know. When I get the kids for visits and stuff, they don't want to go home. Nanny, I want to stay with you. And it really breaks my heart because they're hanging on to the car or they're hanging on to me. And they being, I had one of the grandchildren, she was 13, and she said, "Nanny, I was going to run away. I packed my bags. I was going to run away. But when I turned around and seen my two little brothers, I couldn't find myself to do it because, of course, I didn't want to leave them." So, you know, the kids have got all these thoughts in their head. And they were interviewed at the school one day. They come home crying. I was hanging out the clothes and I said, "What are you crying for?" "Oh, them naughty people come to the school and they said that, asking us questions, whether you look after us, whether you feed us properly." And, you know, child safety need to see, and it's all about the children. Well, they should ask those children. My husband couldn't visit the kids unless he was supervised. We're grandparents. We don't need that shit, you know. And it breaks his heart because he can't see the kids. So we've got to do something about it, you know.
Assumptions made about people, you know, as you say, like that he needs to have someone there supervising him.
Yeah, that's not. It's just not for us. We're grandparents. We had a fight. My son, he was living in Cairns. He was living with this girl, and she became pregnant. And he got really shattered because they went to Centrelink one day, and then she turns around and says to my son, "That's the father of the baby." So there was a big battle there. I kept flying back and forwards to Cairns, and we won the battle. He got that little girl, and it's his now. Even though he was proven not to be the father, he's done a really good job. And I really commend him on it, and now Child Safety in Cairns want to use him as a, what's the name, you know, to other people, other young fathers. But he's really doing well, and I thank him, you know, because he just showed me what he can do. And it's, I just don't believe it's child safety, you know, what they can do to us. It's, you know, that, and you get the Murray ones at work, it really upsets me because they feel good about it when they're taking a child. One of my other daughters, she had a baby in Redcliffe Hospital, and they told her to bond with the baby, knowing very well that they were taking the baby away from her. And the Murray one that picked the baby up and walked away was smiling. I was thinking to myself, how could you do that? You know, you're one of us, you know. And she just, now I think karma come back on her because she's not really well at the moment. And how the removal of the kids happened was two of the kids got out under the fence. That afternoon, four carloads of child safety officers pulled up at my house to remove the children. One little mistake that they jumped out under the fence and walked up the road. So,
and I think, as with anyone with kids would know, I mean, those things happen. Having kids is, you know.
That's it.
Kids escape and, you know, they're.
Well, it was just one simple little thing that they removed them because the kid got out under the fence.
And they make such a big deal, and you have to wonder if, you know, it's a racist thing that, you know, they've decided. Would they do that with a white family whose kids just, you know, happened to escape from the yard?
Well, it was just really sad because one of them was washing and the other one was cooking, you know. So, yeah, it's just child safety have a lot to answer for. I just detest them, eh? I can't put up with them.
I think that the workers as well, the Aboriginal workers that we place into those positions should be held accountable as well. Because the fights that we fight today have landed us a lot of positive roles that could help us out in child safety. We have the opposite down in New South Wales, where a lot of the Aboriginal workers don't want to have any contact with a removal, but they like to sit in those jobs and collect the dollars and collect the money to feather their nest, but then still turn around and allow these white systems to come in and steal our children from us. And not have the capacity or don't have the capacity within their organisational structure to have a say and make sure that they stop these removals from happening. And I think Aboriginal people in those positions need to be held accountable as well.
I really believe in that, brother, you know, that they need to be more compassionate towards us. When I go to family group meetings, the recognised entity, the one that they send to be a part of the meeting, she sits there with the hand up under her chin, says nothing, you know, when the questions are being asked. At the end of the session, they'll say, have you got anything to say? She says, no. I pulled her up. I said, Bub, don't come to any of these meetings. If you're not going to stand up for us, then you best to stay at the office and get paid to stay at the office. And the other thing, too, I should have mentioned, is that my daughter, she was chroming, and she lost a little fella to chroming. Then she had another baby, and the baby survived. So that what happened was child safety said, oh, well, you can take the baby. They didn't want me to actually take the baby. We had to go to court. And the judge said, you give that baby back to the grandmother. Then all from that, then the elderly child safety office was always, you know, being negative to me, passing on information to other service centres. I was dealing with 5 child safety officers for my grandchildren, and it's really heartbreaking, you know, to deal with this sort of stuff. And because that daughter, she slept at the house, that she wasn't supposed to. When she came to the house, I said, Bub, you know you're not allowed, you know, because otherwise I'll take the baby. But because she'd been crying, half of her brain was, it's damaged, so she decided to sleep at the house. They went and questioned the grandkids at school then the next day. Oh, was auntie at the house? And they said, yeah. So they come with police and everything to take the baby. And they should have looked at it that, you know, this baby survived. And she was just so happy that the baby was there. And, yeah, she just finds it very hard now to even go to the cemetery to visit the baby. And it's really, really, really sad.
Heartbreaking.
And, yeah, so I've been feeling a lot of heartbreak. And since I've been dealing with child safety, my health's deteriorated. My GP said, you know, you need to... child safety need to leave you alone because your health is deteriorating because of that, through all the stress and stuff, you know.
So. Well, thanks for sharing with us this afternoon. Yeah. Unfortunately, we're just about out of time for the program. We've got to go back to the studios in Melbourne. But, thank you very much.
Then, thank you
it's
very
been a
much.
Pleasure having you on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
And thanks, Albert, as well.
Thank you.
And, thanks to everyone in the park again for having us here this week. I have to say, we've felt very welcome here in Musgrave Park. We've been enjoying ourselves immensely. And, of course, stay tuned to 3CR. We'll be back on air from live from Musgrave Park at 5:30 Melbourne time. We're out of here. Thanks to Matt again for letting us have some time on Burning Vinyl. Thanks to everyone involved in the show. Thanks to the band for playing earlier. Thanks to Tishan for doing the tech stuff. And I think it's time for In Your Face.
You've been listening to a podcast of 3CR's live coverage from the G20 in Brisbane. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. To listen to more podcasts or donate online, go to 3cr.org.au.